This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheye Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
These expenditures necessarily divert resources away from human development, social needs, social priorities.
That was Omar Dahi, director of the Security in Context Research Network, on the financial costs of conflicts in the Middle East and North Africa. Details coming up. Also today, the world observes the UN International Day of the Victims of Enforced Disappearances. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, there is still no word on the fate of Zimbabwean journalist turned human rights activist Itai Zamara, an outspoken government critic who disappeared nearly a decade ago in March 2015. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare as the world observes the UN International Day of the Victims of Enforced Disappearances today, and as human rights activists and Zamara's family are demanding answers.
Shefra Dorika Zamara, the wife of Itai Zamara, says the family wants to know what happened to the journalist-turned rights activist. Itai Zamara disappeared March 9, 2015, while having his hair cut by a barber in his neighborhood of Glenoram. He was reportedly abducted by suspected state security agents. Prior to his disappearance, he had been protesting outside the parliament building, calling for the government of then-President Robert Mugabe to respect human rights and boost the moribund economy. Shefra Zamara says answers need to be forthcoming. She says it's almost 10 years without knowing where Itai is. I do not want to lie. It's painful if I think about it and no one can tell what happened to him. He disappears from Zimbabwe and there's silence about it. She says it's really painful if I look at the kids. The first one was 7 and the other one was 2. They are now grown up. They now ask, where is our dad? And no one can explain what happened to him. It's really painful, she adds, because I have no answers. Shefra Zamara says she's the family's sole breadwinner and that is hard for her and her family to get by on roughly $300 a month. Charles Kwaramba of the group Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says he got a court order in 2015 for police to search for Zamara, but he adds police have ignored the order.
The investigation into Itai Zamara's disappearance is virtually dead. We have not received any reports or indications that the police is still pursuing any investigation in the matter. Previously, we used to receive reports from the police of what they were doing, how they were doing it, the places they were going to, how they were conducting their search. But that stopped a long time ago. In some instances, we would actually meet with officials from police, but that stopped again a long time ago.
This week, Paul Nyati, a Zimbabwe Republic police spokesman, said he could not comment on Zamara's case. Amnesty International has said it believes Zamara is a victim of enforced disappearance. Lucia Masuka, head of Amnesty in Zimbabwe, says the government of President Emmerson Mnangagwa should make an effort to find the missing activist.
Enforced disappearances are deployed as a strategy to silence activists, to silence those expressing dissent in this country. And the case that comes to mind is that of Itai Zamara, well known for speaking out against corruption, for speaking out against bad governance, and for leading peaceful protests. The High Court had issued an order for authorities to investigate the case, bringing the perpetrators of this enforced disappearance to account and ensure that the families of those affected secure justice.
Several demonstrations to force Harare to reveal what happened to Zamara have not yielded results. Rights groups have harshly criticized Zimbabwe for human rights abuses for decades. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare.
Data from the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute shows military spending for countries in the Middle East and North Africa totaled $252 billion in 2023, 12% higher than 2022 and almost double the world growth rate. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy has more on what that means.
Global defense spending has risen in the past year as the number of violent armed conflicts reached the highest level since 1946. The Stockholm International Peace Research Institute's military expenditure database, known as SIPRI, attributes the increase primarily to the war in Ukraine and escalating tensions in the Middle East. Defense spending by countries in the Middle East and North Africa or MENA region is rising rapidly as a share of GDP and of overall government spending compared with all other regions. Some experts say the numerous conflicts in the region have had dire consequences for political stability, security, human rights, and sustainable development. Omar Dahi is a professor of economics at Hampshire College in the U.S. state of Massachusetts and director of the Security in Context Research Network.
These expenditures necessarily divert resources away from human development, social needs, social priorities. There's a trend that is of people in the region trying to assert their needs and aspirations for social justice, for socioeconomic development, for freedom, and those desires being subverted, quashed, transformed, suppressed by states focus on autocracy, stability, and security for ruling governments and ruling regimes.
Dahi was speaking at a recent online seminar organized by SIPRI and the Arab Center in Washington. He added, "There is another trend associated with this rise in military spending of more assertive, aggressive, securitized states. Some are aligned with the West, such as Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Morocco, but others, such as Algeria, are not." SIPRI's latest report shows that the MENA defense spending totaled $252 billion in 2023, up 20% from 2022. Algeria's arms spending grew by 76% to a record $18.3 billion. Dahi notes that diverting money to buy weapons could prove domestically risky for some governments.
A lot of the money is tied up in subsidies that they use to maintain stability, because if they were to withdraw subsidies on energy and bread and other things like that, there would be an uprising. So they take regime security as a given, and we see that happening in many countries today.
The increase in military spending in the Middle East reflects the shifting situation in the region from the warming of diplomatic relations between Israel and several Arab countries to the outbreak of a major war in Gaza and fears of a regional-wide conflict. SIPRI says Israel's military spending, the second largest in the region after Saudi Arabia, grew by 24% to $27.5 billion, driven by Israel's offensive in Gaza after Hamas fighters attacked in October. Emma Saubreyer is director of Pathways to Renewed and Inclusive Security in the Middle East Initiative, which is part of the World Peace Foundation in the United States. In the seminar, she said, "Many Western countries think military spending contributes to stability and could eventually lead to economic growth, but she says that is a myth."
Egypt is a very clear example of how this does not at all benefit all of the population. You have a militarized economy, and what you see is just a growing disconnect between how the military is everywhere in the economy does not benefit the rest of the population.
She added, "Some governments are using national security as a justification to sideline opposition figures, saying they belong to terrorist organizations or have spread false information." Mohamed El-Shenawy, VOA, Washington.
Namibian authorities blocked a ship from sailing through the country's waters or docking in the country because it allegedly was carrying weapons for Israel. The decision came after Namibia's Economic and Social Justice Trust petitioned to have the vessel banned. Vitalio Anguilla reports from Windhoek, Namibia.
Namibian Economic and Social Justice Trust argued that allowing a ship headed to Israel would be aiding the Israeli military in the war that began last October. Speaking on behalf of the organization, Herbert Yao says maritime law should do more to make sure that the country does not facilitate war.
But it's very important to recall that in the case that South Africa brought against the State of Israel, the International Court of Justice issued a ruling, a binding ruling, that Israel should fulfill its obligation under the Genocide Convention in relation to Palestinians in Gaza to take all measures within its power to prevent the commissioning of all acts within the article of the convention, in particular, killing of members of the group.
South Africa has filed a case in the International Court of Justice in The Hague, accusing Israel of committing genocide against Palestinians in its war with Hamas. Several other countries have backed the South African case. Israel has denied the allegations and the court has not ruled on the case. Namibia's Minister of International Relations, Peya Mushelenga, told VOA that maritime law dictates that Namibia and other coastal nations should play a role in ensuring global security.
Namibia enjoying relations with Palestine. Secondly, Namibia believe in international peace and security. Third, Namibia has been one of the countries that supported resolutions either in the Security Council or, has supported resolutions at the General Assembly calling for the end of the occupation of the Palestinian territory. And we do not want to support anything that goes to kill innocent people in Palestine or to entertain anything in that respect.
VOA asked the Embassy of Israel in South Africa for comment, but never got a response to email and phone requests. Benji Schulman with the pro-Israel South Africa Zionist Federation says the Vintu government stance is worse for Namibia than it is for Israel.
Israel maintains extensive trade relations with Europe, the Americas, China and India, and many others. If Namibia was to follow this path, it will only hurt Africans who stand to benefit from Israeli innovations in water, healthcare, agriculture, and technology. As a country that was affected by genocide, it is unfortunate that Namibia is aligning itself with the genocidal regimes of Hamas and Iran, who openly call for the killing of Jews. On October 7th, not only Jews were killed, but those from up to 29 different countries, including African states. Namibia places itself at risk on these same groups by supporting them.
The war in the Gaza territory began last October when Hamas militants attacked Israel, killed about 1,200 people and kidnapped more than 200 others. The Hamas leadership of Gaza has never recognized Israel's right to existence and has in the past called for its destruction. The Gaza Health Ministry has reported more than 40,000 people have died since Israel attacked the territory, most of them civilians. Vitalio Anguilla for VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. The Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, has increased health care access for millions of Americans, but it is not clear what the future of the program will be under the next president. Neither the Harris nor the Trump campaign has provided details on its vision for the act, but voters are watching very closely. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the story.
Optician Taja Dove is one of about 25 million Americans who don't have health insurance. She's researching coverage options given the experiences she has had without it.
I might not feel well, and I'll try to say, okay, well, this might not be serious, a cold or something not serious, so I might try to put it off. because I know I don't have the insurance to pay for it if I have to go to the hospital.
The Affordable Care Act passed in 2010 under the Obama administration. The health reform law is credited with helping cut by nearly half the number of non-elderly uninsured Americans, according to the health policy organization KFF. Cynthia Cox is vice president and director of the KFF program on the Affordable Care Act. She spoke via Skype.
Created some new health insurance markets that had not existed before. And this is where people can come to buy their own insurance and get a federal subsidy to make it more affordable.
As of March, 21 million Americans had health insurance through the Affordable Care Act marketplaces. Republicans have for years tried to repeal the law. Former Trump advisor and president of the Paragon Health Institute, Brian Blaze, listed some objections. He was interviewed via Skype.
The ACA restricted choices, increased health care consolidation, which is hospitals buying up physician practices, health care providers merging. And all of that has increased prices and spending, and American health hasn't improved meaningfully.
ACA supporters disagree. The topic is now central to the Harris-Walz Democratic presidential campaign.
He intends to end the Affordable Care Act, to take us back to a time when insurance companies had the power to deny people with pre-existing conditions.
As president, Trump tried and failed to repeal the ACA. He takes a different approach in his current campaign.
I'm going to keep the Affordable Care Act. It stinks. It's not good. If we can do something better, we're going to do something with it. If we can do better, meaning less expensive and better health care for you.
Neither the Harris nor the Trump campaign responded to VOA requests for details on how the nominees plan to improve or strengthen the Affordable Care Act. Former Trump advisor Brian Blaze supports reforming rather than repealing the ACA.
Redirecting a portion of the subsidies away from insurers and towards individuals.
For Carl Hughes, an ACA enrollee, this is personal. He urges the future occupant of the White House to keep patients' best interests in mind when assessing changes.
That their tweaking of it is going to be to improve it, not block it.
Alongside abortion rights and immigration, Hughes, an independent, says he'll prioritize the healthcare topic when he casts his vote in the November election. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
In the first major television interview of her presidential campaign, Harris promised yesterday to take a tougher approach to migration and said she would not keep weapons from Israel. Harris and her running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, were interviewed on CNN. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez has met with Senegal's president as part of a trip through three West African nations aimed at tackling irregular migration to Spain's Canary Islands. The Associated Press reports the two leaders signed agreement to promote temporary work opportunities in Spain for Senegalese nationals and vocational training in the West African country. Sanchez began his tour Tuesday in Mauritania, where he announced Spain will provide temporary work opportunities in Spain to Mauritanians. He was in Senegal on Wednesday and Thursday. The Spanish leader said regulated migration vaccinates countries against those who make a business out of illegal or unauthorized migration. And a Ugandan shrine owner is under investigation for a human sacrifice after 24 skulls were discovered at the site on the outskirts of the capital, Kampala. The French news agency AFP says the find on Sunday comes only a month after 17 other skulls, including those of children, were unearthed in a separate case in the Eastern African country. Officers raided Godfrey Dudamouril's shrine following a tip-off from neighbors and discovered the skulls on the floor of a building. Dudamourila, who says he is a traditional healer, was detained on Monday and was helping with police investigations. Searches of the sites were continuing. And now, our sports wrap-up. Sports analyst Mokbil Yabaro in studio. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Yehez.
So the Paris Paralympics kicked off on Wednesday. Can you fill us in about some of the exciting events?
Absolutely, Yehez. So one of the most interesting games that they had that kicked off yesterday was Boccia, an Italian game that they have in the Paris Olympics. They also have goalball. They have para archery as well as para badminton. And then just to look at some of the usuals that we normally see in the Olympics as well, they have swimming, table tennis, taekwondo, and wheelchair basketball was very, very exciting. If we're just quickly looking at some of the teams, the countries that have already medaled, China is at the top with 11 medals in total. They have 5 golds, 4 silvers, and 2 bronze, followed by Great Britain and Australia. So all in all, I feel like, man, it's going to be a very, very exciting Paralympics. It's amazing that, you know, what athletes are able to do even after or if they aren't, you know, capable potentially to be able to do what Olympians do with their specific disabilities. It's great to see that even they can still be Olympians.
In adversity, they triumph.
Absolutely.
So the English Premier League is going on week 3. What are some games to look forward to, Mokbil?
Oh, yeah, so I'm going to have to start it off with Arsenal. Arsenal will be playing Brighton. Bright and early tomorrow. That is two teams that are undefeated at the moment. So we will see who will get their first loss of the season or if they end up both drawing as well. Arsenal is expecting to win simply because if they want to keep pace on what they were able to do last year, finishing off second, potentially trying to win the Premier League, they cannot afford to drop any points this earlier on. I would say also a game to watch this weekend will be Liverpool versus Manchester United, two teams that have very big African audiences. We will see what our producer Dave Vandy and his cohorts will be saying on Monday after they play the game on Sunday. And then lastly, I say one more game that'll be very interesting will be Leicester City versus Aston Villa. Leicester City is a team that has come up from the championship, one of the three teams that were able to advance to the Premier League. They're doing pretty decent, and they're playing Aston Villa. Aston Villa finished third last year. I should say top four. They finished in the fourth position last year. So we'll see if they're able to bounce back from a loss that they had against Arsenal last week. So that's Premier League action.
Premier League action. And lastly, my favorite sport, the U.S. Open Tennis, has big matches coming up today. How do we expect them to go?
Ooh, absolutely. If we're just looking at, you know, the the defending champion of the U.S. Open, Djokovic, he will be going up against the world number 28, Popperin. You know, he is expected to win. That'll be about 7 p.m. Eastern tonight. Another very interesting game from the men's side will be Shelton versus Tiafoe. This is another rematch they've played in the past. Kind of seemed like Tiafoe's really about to kind of get over his hump. It's been a bit challenging for him. And then on the women's side, I would say Coco Gauff, the defending champion, will be going up against the world number 27, Svitolina. She should get that win. And then we're also looking at Sabalenka, the world number 2, who potentially could go up against Coco if they both make it to the end. That's all from me, Hayes.
Packed sports weekend. The VOA sports analyst, Mokbil Yabaro, thank you for your input.
Thanks for having me.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.